Okay, so let's continue Stories of the Prophet, and today we're going to learn more about Ibrahim alayhi salam. So Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam is one of the greatest prophets and the father of us all. He is described by Allah as being an ummah. Muslim, Jews, Christians all trace their roots back to him. Ibrahim alayhi salam is mentioned in our prayers at least 5 times a day. Such an honored position has he that he was described as Khalil Allah, the friend of Allah. Due to his strength of faith, the Quran attributes the one and only true religion to the path of Ibrahim, even though prophets before him, such as Nuh, called to the same faith. From Ibrahim alayhi salam's 2 sons lay the lineage of Muslims and the Jews. Due to the excellence of Ibrahim alayhi salam, Allah made prophets from his progeny. From them, Ismail, Ishaq, Yaqub, Musa, guiding people to the truth. Many Quranic verses revealed concerning him suggest that his outstanding importance and high rank among prophets was because of the purity and sincerity of his relationship with his Lord, to whom he totally surrendered his will. It is essential that Muslims know of the story of Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, as much of Islam refers to him. Okay, so it begins in southern Iraq. Okay, so Ur, which is now part of southern Iraq, according to tradition, is the place where Ibrahim alayhi salam began his mission as a prophet. In his time, the city of Ur was a flourishing industrial and business center. The people who lived there were a community of idol worshippers ruled by a proud, tyrannical king, Nimrod. It is said he was one of the 4 greatest kings of ancient times among prophets. Though there was King Sulaiman, alayhislam, Dhulkarnain, and Nebuchadnezzar. In addition to being the supreme ruler, Nimrod had established himself as a god who was worshipped by his people, together with other gods. It is said by Quranic narrators that before Ibrahim alayhi salam's birth, a star appeared of such shimmering brightness that it outshone the sun and the moon. This frightened the king, and he called his magicians and astrologers to ask them the meaning of this occurrence. They replied that a man would arise in his territory who was destined to destroy him and his rule. Hearing this, Nimrod left and moved to another town, compelling everyone to move with him and ordering the killing of any boy to be born to them. Ibrahim alayhi salam's father Azar placed his pregnant wife in a cave, fearing for his unborn. After a while, when the soothsayer's prophecies were not fulfilled, Nimrod decided that they had been merely lies of the magicians. He ordered his people to return home and soon forgot about the matter. Meanwhile, Ibrahim alayhi salam was born in the cave, where he spent his early years. He grew up quickly without seeing any human beings beside his parents. When Azar was assured that there was nothing to fear from the king, he went to the cave and took his boy out. It is said that Ibrahim alayhi salam was about 10 years old at that time. Now Azar was an idol worshipper and thus would have taught Ibrahim alayhi salam about the religion of deities and temples. At a time of life when other children are occupied with childish pursuits, Ibrahim alayhi salam had already concluded about the idols his people worshipped. It is also suggested that he may already have begun to discuss and debate the matter with his father Azar. When night fell, he saw a star and exclaimed it to be his Lord, and likewise when he saw the moon rising. But the star and the moon set, and Ibrahim alayhi salam reconsidered the matter. A disappearing object could not be his Lord or the Lord of anything else. And with the innate understanding of his pure fitra, he turned to the true Lord for enlightenment, asking for guidance and not to stray. This is Quran, Surah number 6, verse 77. When day dawned and he saw the sun rising, he claimed the sun to be his Lord, but then the sun too started to set. Thus Ibrahim al-Islam concluded that his people, with their worship of heavenly bodies and images made by their own hands, were in the gravest error and confusion. There could be no God except the Creator, all things, including those heavenly bodies, which were the greatest of all material objects, and which his people unthinkingly worshipped in place of the one who had created them. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam's heart was now firmly fixed upon his Lord with deep certainty. The heart of the young prophet-to-be was guided and illuminated by his Lord, expanded and deepened. As Allah revealed to him the secrets of his divine essence, the mysteries of creation, and the great all-wise workings of his will. Consequently, Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam came to his Lord with a sound heart, free of any trace of doubt or questioning. He surrendered with deep and absolute faith to Allah at the command of the Lord of the Worlds. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam made a request of his Lord. The deep loving familiarity between him and his Lord is shown in his manner of making the request. "My Lord," Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam said humbly, "show me how you give life to the dead." Quran Surah number 2, verse 260. "Do you not have faith?" came the response. "Yes," Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam replied firmly, "but my heart may be satisfied." Then Allah, the Most Gracious, gave Ibrahim the answer. "Then take 4 birds and make them attached to you," Allah instructed the young prophet. "Then put part of them on each hill and call them. They will come to you quickly and know that Allah is Almighty and Wise." It is reported that Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam carried out the order, cutting the birds into pieces, mixing together their flesh and feather, keeping the birds' heads with him, and then called the birds to him. The part of the birds, including the feathers, came together, and when he reattached their heads, they became as they had been before. Through this deep parable, Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam was shown the limitless power of the one who creates and recreates as he wills. And through Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam's question and divine response, Allah Most High informs mankind that just as trained birds are attached to their master by invisible bonds, so when he calls us on the day of resurrection, regardless of how long we may have been dead and the condition of our earthly remains, we will respond to him and return to life. Okay, so moving on. Now Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam starts to speak to his people. His first call was directed to his father, who worshipped idols. As a father, he deserved his most sincere advice. In the Quran, Allah the Most High reports a number of dialogues between Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam and his people. In what order and under what circumstances these dialogues took place, we do not know. However, they were all to lead up to the eventual climactic confrontation between the young prophet and the forces of falsehood. When Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam asked his father and his people about the idols they worshipped, and if those idols heard the calls of the people replied that since they had inherited their religion from their forefathers, they were not prepared to question it. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam invited his father towards the way of the truth with gentleness and politeness. He explained to him why he was wrong in worshipping idols, which neither have the capability to hear what the worshippers invoke them for, nor could they see. How then could they avail anybody's needs or provide them provision or help? Then Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam told his father about what Allah has bestowed upon him of guidance and beneficial knowledge for the guidance of mankind, though he was younger in his age than his father. When Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam offered his father divine guidance and sincere advice, he was rejected, and his father threatened to stone him if he did not stop from his preaching. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam wished him peace and promised his father to pray to Allah to forgive him. When it became clear to Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam that his father was an enemy to Allah, he disassociated himself from him. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam, in eloquent statement, made clear his position with regard to the gods, stating the oneness of Allah, Lord of the world, who created the world, Allah who guides and gives food and drink, Allah who cures when his creation is ill, and who will cause his creation to die and bring it to life on the day of resurrection. Ibrahim Alayhis-Salam then addressed his Lord in one of the most beautiful prayers of all time. "My Lord, grant me authority and join me with righteousness, and grant me a reputation of honor among later generations, and place me among the inheritors of the garden of pleasure. With the love of a son, he pleaded forgiveness for his misguided father, Azar. Ibrahim al-Islam went among his people, calling them to their Lord and attempting to convince them of the foolishness of ascribing divinity to anything other than him. When his people argued with him, Ibrahim al-Islam replied that no harm could possibly come to him from the false gods unless Allah himself willed to test him. And whatever happens to him will be from Allah, not from the lifeless, powerless statues or heavenly bodies that the misguided people worshipped. My Lord encompasses all things in knowledge, he said, meaning that Allah knows all about you and your idols and about me and my situation. Then will you not remember? And how should I fear what you associate, while you do not fear that you what you have associated with Allah? He continued. Then with one final thrust at their false gods and false religion, he drove home this point, that for which he has not sent down to you any authority. So which of the two parties has more right to security, if you should know? Thus did Allah answer the arguments of those who worshipped false deities by the tongue of his young prophet, who spoke so passionately and fearlessly on behalf of his Lord. An idea presented itself to Ibrahim al-Islam for dealing with the idols, and he agreed to do so. He agreed to go along to his father Azar to a celebration. His plan was an extraordinarily bold and clever one, calculated to show the idol worshippers the error of their beliefs so conclusively that they could no longer deny the truth. He resolved upon his plan as the most powerful argument he could devise against their false gods. On the way to the ceremonies, he challenged them regarding their worship of idols, and at the same time he attached the foolish notion of worshipping something made by human beings. His companions retorted that his suggestion that they and their fathers were misguided and in error was too far-fetched to be taken seriously. No, Ibrahim al-Islam replied, rather, your Lord is the Lord of the heavens and the earth who created them, and I, to that, am of those who testify. And he cast a glance at the stars. According to the account of Ibn Abbas radiallahu anha, he flung himself down, saying to his companions, indeed, I am ill, meaning my foot is in pain. His companions remained with him for a while as he lay there, sitting by his feet, but soon they turned away from him. Ibn Abbas narrates that Ibrahim al-Islam went back to the house of gods, which was in a great hall. Opposite the entrance to the hall was a great idol, and at his side a smaller one, and next to him a smaller one, and so on down to the entrance of the hall. The people had prepared food and placed it before the gods, saying, when we come back, the gods will have blessed our food and we will eat. Ibrahim al-Islam mocked the idols, observing that the food in front of them was untouched. Naturally, there was no response. Do you not eat? What is wrong with you that do you not speak? He demanded. And then with all his strength, he hacked at them with an axe, fragmenting the stone idols into pieces, except a big one. When he was done, he hung the axe around the neck of the largest idol and left. Later, when the people came back to take back their food, they found idols smashed and broken upon the ground. Who has done this to our gods? They asked in horror. Indeed, he is among the wrongdoers. Ibrahim al-Islam was summoned to testify that he was the one who had done this deed. He was an extremely daring and courageous young prophet. At the same time, he was also brilliantly intelligent, a match for anyone. This was shown not only by this clever plan he had just carried out, but also by the reply he now gave to his accusers, by which he neither denied nor admitted his guilt. Instead, to shock them into realization of the falsity of their position, he replied, rather, this, the largest of them, did it. So ask them if they should be able to speak. Ibrahim al-Islam's words hit home. The disbelievers now turned back to themselves in confusion and embarrassment, unable to find words with which to reply to him. Indeed, you yourself are the wrongdoers, they admitted shamefacedly. But when they had time to consider the matter further, they reversed themselves, saying to Ibrahim al-Islam that he already knew that these idols did not speak. Ibrahim al-Islam hammered them about the gods that they created with their own hands, gods that which neither benefited nor harmed them, shaming them and asking them to reason and accept the truth. But the response of his people was only kill him or burn him, and the outcry resounded among them, burn him and support your gods if you are to act. Perhaps it was at this time that Ibrahim al-Islam came face to face with the powerful tyrant king Nimrud, whose name is often used in Arabic to mean tyrant or the oppressor. Over the years, since there was no one above him and everyone was under him, Nimrud's unchallenged ego had grown to such monstrous proportions that he imagined himself to be God on earth. He called the young prophet and began questioning him about Allah. The inspired prophet replied to the proud, invincible ruler on behalf of his Lord, fearlessly pointing out the contrast between the infinite glory and majesty of the creator and the sustainer of the universes and Nimrud's minute, temporal bit of earthly power and pomp. When Ibrahim al-Islam said to him, "My Lord is the one who gives life and causes death," Nimrud retorted, "I give life and cause death. Allah, the Lord of majesty and honor, granted his prophet a decisive argument with which to defeat the earthly king who had set himself up as a rival and authority. Indeed, Allah brings up the sun from the east," Ibrahim al-Islam said simply. "So bring it up from the west." The proud ruler was nonplussed and became speechless, unable to contend with the powerful logic of truth. He could not dispute the fact that anyone claiming to be God must have the power and control over creation equal to that of the creator. Thus, Allah says in Quran, "So the disbeliever was overwhelmed by astonishment, and Allah does not guide the wrongdoing people." It is narrated by Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam's companion, Salman al-Farisi radiallahu anha, that Nimrud starved two lions so that they might devour Ibrahim al-Islam. However, when the lions came to him, they stood before him in reverence, then licked and prostrated at his feet. Now, Ibrahim al-Islam's people had had enough of the man who rebelled against their Lord. "Construct for him a furnace and throw him into the burning fire," they clamored. For although some among them certainly recognized the truth of his words, they struck at the very foundations of their false beliefs and established way of life. And since the truth was unbearable to them, the one who proclaimed it would have to go. Ibrahim al-Islam was imprisoned and the people went out to further fuel the fire. Through the fire, its makers intended to burn not just Ibrahim al-Islam, but the truth which they refused to accept, to rid of it once and for all, or so they imagined. It is said that the fire started to burn and began a huge blaze, and its sparks seemed to be touching the sky. It is reported that as Ibrahim al-Islam was being bound and shackled before being thrown into the fire, angel Jibreel al-Islam came to him. "O Ibrahim, do you have any need?" he asked. "Yes, but not from you," was the steadfast reply. It is said that an especially wicked unbeliever devised a catapult by which the noble prophet was hurled into the midst of the roaring fire. Ibn Abbas radiallahu anha states that the last words Ibrahim al-Islam spoke before he was flung into the blaze were, "Hasbiyallahu wa ni'mal wakil," Allah is sufficient for us, and how excellent a protector. This is from Bukhari Hadith. And all the gathered people watched, waiting for the fire to consume him to ashes. Allah, the Lord of creation, guardian and protector of believers, commanded, "O fire, be coolness and safety upon Ibrahim." Ali ibn Abu Talib radiallahu anha said that it meant, "Do not harm him." Ibn Abbas and Abu Aliyah, had Allah not said safe for Ibrahim, the coolness would have harmed him. And Ibrahim al-Islam sat in midst of the inferno in a heavenly garden provided by his beloved Lord, for whose sake he was enduring this awesome trial, in safe and peace and total satisfaction with him. It is said that the angel of shade sat at his side comforting him. And indeed, Prophet Muhammad mentioned that the fire burned nothing on Ibrahim al-Islam except the ropes that bound him. By one of the greatest miracles of all time, Ibrahim al-Islam emerged from the fire safe and unharmed. Because of this and similar sacrifices, Ibrahim al-Islam was granted the position of leadership of mankind, and all the religions of the world honor, respect, and love him. And Ibrahim al-Islam stood before his people and once again confronted them with truth, neither frightened nor intimidated by their attempt to destroy him. You have only taken, other than Allah, idols as a bond of affection among you in worldly life, he charged. He then warned them that although their false religion might seem to be their advantage for the moment, on the day of resurrection you will deny one another and curse one another, and your refuge will be the fire, and you will not have any helpers. According to Ibn Abbas radiallahu anha and other commentators, the one who had argued with Ibrahim al-Islam about his lord, that is Nimrud, now gave orders that he be exiled from the city. Thus, by the decree of the best of the planners, Ibrahim al-Islam's mission in Ur came to an end. Indeed, I will go where I am ordered by my Lord, he announced. He will guide me. This is Quran, chapter 37, verse 99. He then cut himself off forever from everything that his people stood for and worshipped by declaring to his father and his people, indeed, I am dissociated from that which you worship except for he who created me. And indeed, he will guide me. And Ibrahim al-Islam made his witnessing to the oneness of the partnerless creator and the falsity of all deities but him, a word remaining among his descendants that they might return to it. Among some other opinions, and according to some people, some of Ibrahim al-Islam's followers became believers after what Allah had done for him, although they were still afraid of Nimrud and the people of their community. And what was it that these believers said Allah praises so highly? It was the following declaration to their unbelieving people, which has been memorialized in the book of Allah, which is Quran. Indeed, we are dissociated from you and from whatever you worship other than Allah. We have denied you, and this referred to the idols, and there has appeared between us and you animosity and hatred forever until you believe in Allah alone. The sole exception to this was Ibrahim al-Islam saying to his father, I will surely ask forgiveness for you. Ever truthful, he added, but I have not power to do for you anything against Allah. And Ibrahim al-Islam and the believers with him surrendered their wills to Allah, the guide, the protector, resting all their affairs with him. Our Lord, upon you we have relied and to you we have returned, and to you is the destination. Putting all his trust in his beneficent Lord, who is directing his every word and every step, Ibrahim al-Islam departed from his birthplace saying, indeed I will immigrate to the service of my Lord. Indeed he is the exalted in might, the all-wise. It is narrated by Zayd ibn Aslam radiallahu anha that Allah sent an angel to the haughty king Nimrud, commanding him to believe in Allah, but he refused to do so. Then he called him again and he refused. Then he called him the third time and refused to do so again, and said, you call for and gather your people, and I will call forth and gather my people. Nimrud gathered his army and people at sunrise, and Allah sent upon them an army of mosquitoes in such a number that they overshadowed the sun. They ate their flesh and drank their blood and left them a structure of bones. One of these mosquitoes entered the nose of the king and stayed therein. He is punished by that mosquito, and to get relief from it, the king hit his head with a hammer till he died. Historical records bear out the fact that after the immigration of Ibrahim al-Islam and the believers, Nimrud's kingdom was afflicted by continuous disasters. The capital city Ur fell, and Nimrud was captured along with the idol of the chief god, as a result of which the people of Ur completely lost faith in false gods that had failed to protect them from ruin. Okay, so I will stop here for today because it's close to 30 minutes now, and I will meet you with part 2. So till then.